We're up to lecture Shia 15, and first of all, this is Le'iloi Nishmas Rochel Leia Bas Reb Chaim Tzvi. In advance, I want to thank Libby for the wonderful job that Amir Hashem she's going to do. The screen is out of commission, but Libby says to me that if the questions come to me, she'll try to write them down and submit them to me. Now, we're going to begin on Klal Zayin. This is on Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin. And the line is line 216, I guess. HaKelim va'oyrei, says the Goyin, the Kelim and Oyres, the vessels of the lights, Shein Klal Ashgacha, which constitute all of Ashgacha, Hem b'shnei bechinas. There are two types of hashgacha, meaning igulim v'yosha. Igulim literally means circles, and yosha means lines, straight lines. Shehein says the Goyin hashgacha klolius v'hashgacha protius. In other words, there's a what's called general hashgacha and then specific hashgacha. Now, in order to understand really the context in which the Goyin is speaking, we have to go to the Eitz Chaim. Now, I hope that, in fact, the Eitz Chaim, which was scanned, actually has reached you. So I assume that you have the Eitz Chaim in front of you. If you don't, it will have to remain b'pchinas teresh b'alpeh until you get it. But in any case, I'm reading from the Eitz Chaim on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Dalet in the Dibu HaMaschil V'nei Acha HaTzimtzum. So I'm going to read through the Eitz Chaim, and I'm going to translate and explain it. And after we have understood the Eitz Chaim properly, then we could go and see where is, using the Shivisha language, where is the Goyin coming from? Nonetheless, to understand the words of the Goyin in the context of the Eitz Chaim, because we're going to see that the Goyin lends his own interpretation to the words of the Ari. In addition to that, he the sugya of what's called Igulim and Yosha, he's going to learn a little bit differently. In any case, let's begin by reading the Ari. V'hinei, says the Ari, Achra Tzimtzum Hanal, Haniskala El. After the Tzimtzum, the Ari up to now has described in detail the Tzimtzum, which we have devoted quite a amount of time to in the opening Shi'urim. Asher Az Nisha Mokom HaChalal V'avir Ponoi V'rekoni Be'emza Or Ha'insoif Mamish, Kanal. So what you have is that the Ein Sof of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, which is the light, the spiritual light of God, the infinite light of God, has now contracted to the perimeter of the circle. Hine kavar hayamokom shiuchul liyos sham hanetzalim. Now that there is a empty space in the middle, I think here in the edition of the Eitz Chaim is actually a picture of this, which shows a circle. The perimeter represents the location of the Ein Sof, which is contracted to the print of the circle. The middle of the circle, the inside of the circle, is the place where there can be creations. Sheyuchol liyos sham hanetzalim, there can be things that are created, v'nevroim v'yotzrim. Actually, the Arizal is using three expressions here, netzalim, nevroim v'yotzrim, v'nasim, actually four expressions, to refer to the four worlds of Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya. Netzalim is Atzilus, Devroyim is Bria, Yitzurim is Yitzira, and Nasim is Asiya. Okay, V'az Himshich Minaor Ein Tzoyv Kav Echad Yosha Minaor Ha'agul Shaloi. So then there's a Kav, there's a tube, there's a light which travels through on a line from the Or HaEagle Shaloi, from the perimeter of the circle, Milamala Lamata, meaning that the light travels from the perimeter to the inside of the circle. And that is what the Arizal is calling Lamala Lamata. If you see actually in the picture of the Eitz Chaim, there you see the Chut Ein Sof, which is the conduit, which is being represented as a line, which goes from the perimeter, which is the Or of the Ein Sof, and extends into the inside of the area of the circle. And therefore it comes down and goes into the empty space, the empty area, like this. Kazeh means that the Ari himself, or the Abchaim Vital, draw the diagram. So the beginning of the kav, the beginning of the line, touches the Ein Sof, which is on the perimeter. But the kav, even though it cuts across the interior of the circle, does not touch the polar end of the opposite side of the perimeter, but doesn't touch it. So therefore the Ein Sof goes lamata, the kav extends through, maybe in through the center of the circle, but doesn't touch the opposite end of the perimeter. Within this area, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu created all the worlds. This kav is like a small pipe, a very thin pipe, so through it, the light of the Ein Sof is transmitted, right? Eloilomais, into the worlds. Until the worlds that will be created, that will exist within the area of the circle. Okay, so that's what the Arizal is speaking about. Now, we have to always understand that the Arizal here is using symbols, using Mishalim. But in fact, actually, we shouldn't, you know, think that there's actually a circle and there's actually a Kav. But in other words, a Mavin Yavin, in order to speak about spiritual things, we are in need of certain types of symbols. And this is the best way which the Arizal feels that he can communicate the idea to us. In other words, how can it be that the spheres, which are the things created in the spiritual and the physical worlds, how in fact do we explain the fact that spheres somehow have a certain direction? There's a top and a bottom. But since the kav touches the or of the Ein Sof on the perimeter from the upper part, but it doesn't touch it on the opposite end, therefore we can speak about the head, the beginning and the end. In other words, if the kav extended from one part of the perimeter, the other part of the perimeter, it was merely a diagonal of the circle, then in fact we can't speak about a beginning and end, because everything is perfectly symmetric. However, since the kav is not symmetric, it touches the perimeter on one end, but doesn't reach the perimeter on the other end, so therefore the kav is asymmetric, and therefore we can speak about the beginning and the end. That's what the Arizal is saying. Because if the kav extended from one perimeter to another perimeter, you would have two heads that are equal. There wouldn't be a top and a bottom. Also, that there's actually not a possibility that things can be asymmetric. Okay, now, next paragraph. Vine. So the tsinor, the Ein Sof, which is in a straight line, comes out of the perimeter. It doesn't continue going indefinitely at the very beginning. But rather, it extends a little bit down. At the beginning, the line comes out. And as soon as it comes down a little bit, as soon as it extends out a little bit as a kav, as a line, nispashet v'nimshach v'nasek ye'en galgal echad igul b'saviv. It becomes circular. It forms what you would call a concentric circle within the larger circle, right? Larger circle, which constitutes the perimeter of the Ein Sof. Be called Stada. Now, this concentric circle is not attached at all to the larger circle. Because if this concentric circle would actually touch the larger circle, it would just be absorbed back into the Ein Sof. Says the Arizal. So therefore, the concentric circle inside, it was the circle that's made after the Kav comes down. So this circle has to be a little bit of a distance separated from the larger circle, with the exception of the connection of the Kav. So now I'm turning on to the next page. Okay, now. In other words, the connection of the concentric circle, the first concentric circle, its connection with the larger circle, which is the Ein Sof, which cancels the perimeter of the Chalal, that connection is only with this small little Kav. And through this Kav, the Or comes from the Ein Sof. And it's mashpia on the concentric circle. The Ein Sof safe of Makiv Allah be called Stadav. The Ein Sof surrounds it from all the sides because it's a circle. Gigabhu bechinas eagle tzavu lavuach b'medem ganal. The Ein Sof is also bechinas eagle, but of course it surrounds it completely because the circle is concentric. Because it's important that the ha'ora in that tzolom has to be derech the kav. Because if the or, the or that goes from the outer circle to the inner circle has to come only through this one kav. If it would come from all the sides, if all the or of the perimeter of the Ein Sof would come gushing forth from all the sides of the circle, then he says, all of the creation would become one with the Creator. So the reason there's a kav is that the or that comes from the Ein Sof to the concentric circles should be b'mida v'kitzpa, should be packaged in finite units. So because of that, we can establish what's called 10 spheres. We can give dimensionality, and we can give number and limitation to the emanations of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the purpose of the Kav. As opposed to the Ein Sof, which is infinite. And then the Arizal here brings, like it says in the Zohar, Sefer Zohar, Parshas Pinchas, Pekud Lezada, Kasha Aval Deleis, Isle Mida, Velo Shem Yadir Gab de Sefran. The whole Sphira Isle Yadir Umido Gvul. Every Sphira, right, has a specific dimension and a boundary, Utchum, Uvies a Kav Dak, and since the Kav is very, very dark, very thin, so therefore it conducts light into the spheres enough for the spheres to maintain their finite state. In other words, it shouldn't give them too much light, because then the spheres, which are creations, will become creators. Okay, now, so he says, and of course, this first concentric circle is called Keser, and then comes Chachma, etc., etc. Okay? Now, so in other words, all the worlds that are formed by the concentric circles, first is the first concentric circle, which is what? Keser. Then comes Chachma, etc., etc., and then comes all the Patsufim, all of the entire declension of the spiritual worlds, is established through these concentric circles. Now, the next paragraph, V'yata, and now, says the Arizal, the Var Bechinas Hasheni, there's another Bechina. In other words, up till now we have what's called Igulim, the creation of all of the spiritual physical worlds is represented now by Igulim, by concentric circles. But says the Arizal, there's another type of creation, another Bechina, another dimension, Sheish be Yitzfiras, that is part of the Yitzfiras. Halayhu Bechinas Or HaYosha. And this is called the Or of Yosha. Not the circular light, but the straight light. Kedim Yoin Gimel Kavim Ketsuas Adim Elyon. And since this light consists of three kavim, three lines, right, left, and center. So this illumination of this straight light is Kitzuras Adam Elyon. It bears resemblance to the supernal man. That was the kav. In addition to spreading out and to spreading out in concentric circles, also spreads out in lines, straight lines. And it spreads out from the very end of the gula, the beginning of the gula. And this entire generation, this entire spreading out of light in lines, right, is beside Selim Adam Yasha. And this is of anthropomorphic dimension. Adam Yasha, a man who is straight. Baal Koyma Zekufa. He's upright. Kolo Meramach Evarem. He consists of 248 evarim, and he can be expressed geometrically as three lines, right, left, and center. And he constitutes 10 spheres. Every sphere has 10 spheres, etc., etc. And this second bechina is called Tzelem Elokim. In other words, the bechina, the dimension of straight line, as opposed to igulim, is called Tzelem Elokim. And says the Ari, V'aleah Romas HaKosav Ba'omrei, and this, the Kosav, the scripture refers to, when it says, V'iva Elokim Es HaAdam, B'Tzalmai, Kadosh Baruch Hu created man, B'Tzalmai, B'Tzelem Elokim. And says the Arizal, Kimat kol sefer hazayah, almost all the sefer hazayah deals with this second dimension. But really, in fact, there are two dimensions, igulim and yosher, etc. Okay, so now, we get to the Ari, the following thing, that there are two illuminations, there are two creations. There's igulim and there's yosher. And yosher refers to the anthropomorphic structure of the illumination of light. And this is what the Torah refers to when it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man, B'Tzelem Elokim. The Igulim, even though it's an entire dimension, everything in the world, everything in reality, has its Igulim dimension and its Yosha dimension. But the Gilim is something that at least the Zoya very, very rarely refers to. The important dimension, right, to which the Zoya refers to and to which we devote ourselves to the study is that of the Yosha of the straight lines. And this is the Ari. So we have actually, in fact, two creations, Igulim and then Yosha. Okay. Now, but the Ari doesn't in any way really explain what is Igulim, what is Yosha, except for the fact that Yosha, in a certain sense, is expressed anthropomorphically in terms of Zoya, but exactly what Igulim is, it's not so clear in the Arizal. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to look at the Goyin, because this is really the Bakor, this is really the source. The Goyin is coming out of the Ari. We're going to read the Goyin very carefully now. We're going to see how the Goyin is at once not only lending interpretation to the Ari, but also making, in my opinion, very significant changes. And of course, whenever we see the Goyin make significant changes, that's always cause for us to think and ask ourselves the question, why is he making such changes? Okay, once again, we are in Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin, right? And the last two lines on the page. Once again, let me read again. Hakelem, says the Goyin. Hakelem v'ha'oires. The kelem and oires, she'en klal ha'ashkocha, which constitute hashkocha. Hashkocha meaning the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to the world. Hein shnei bechinas, have two parts to them. Igulim v'yosha. So up till now, the guide since he's following the Ari, that there are two bechinas, Igula and Yosha. Shehein hashkocha klalius, hashkocha pratius. Here, the Gaon introduces an interesting concept. The Ari did not intend in any way to interpret Igulim and Yosha. Says the Gaon, Igulim represents what's called hashkocha klalius, a general hashkocha, general providence. The Yosha are hashkocha pratius, specific providence. Fahindu, that is to say, says the Gaon, and now I'm turning over to Daf, Kuf Lamed Ches, line 218. V'hainu, b'chol yoim, every day, me'asheshesh yimei bereshis, every day, from the 6 days of creation, ha'isa al oisa b'riya protius ha'myuchedes l'oisa yoim. There was a specific creation on every day of the 6 days of creation, b'shkocha protius, with a hashkacha on the specific things that were created on that day. And the other things that were not created on that day, or past were created at the very beginning of the creation, but klolos. Then there was hashkacha klolos. Says the Gaon, for example, on the first day of creation, nivru kol b'ruy b'reishis, b'klolos. Everything was created b'klolos. I suppose the Gaon here is referring to the first pasuk of the Torah, Bereishis bo Elokim, Eis Hashemayim v'Eis Ha'aretz. According to those Rishonim, who say that the Kadosh Baruch Hu created everything but klolius at the very instant of creation. Achasot devorim pratius, but the 7 specific things, right, were created by pratius. Ushat devorim shehein Hashemayim v'Eis Ha'aretz, right, and other things were included among Shemayim v'Aretz. Hashemayim b'pratius. Now, comes the Gaon and says that, in fact, actually, that everything has a pratius aspect to it and a klolius aspect to it. In other words, everything can be understood as something in particular in and of to itself, which is an expression of the what's called hashkacha pratius, but everything relates to something more general, right, to which we refer to when we speak about hashkacha klolius. So goes the Gaon and says, Hashemayim bepratius. The Shemayim themselves is bepratius, utzvoy beklolius. And I guess the larger universe, not just the sky that overlooks the world, that's beklolius. For example, the land can be considered to be pratius, ushatzvoy, and everything else beklolius. And then it says the Gaon, v'chein tomir ashkocha ala odim bepratus. The hashkacha is always on a person first b'pratis. V'al sh'ar v'ulei b'reishis b'klolius. And after that, the hashkacha is b'klolius on the rest of creation. V'chein b'adam b'al Yisrael. Right? Similarly, a Jewish person, that would be b'pratis. The rest of the nation is b'klolius. El Yisrael, says the Gaon, is b'pratis, for example. Now, v'chol ha'umis v'chus l'as b'klolius. As I should have read this all at once, Adam b'Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael are b'pratius, and the Ummas, the other nations, and Chutz La'aretz are b'klolus. Kamo she'ne'emar, like it says, Enei Hashem Elokecha ba Mereishis Asad Eshel Hashana, meaning that the Gaon is bringing here a pasuk, which expresses the fact that there's a hashkacha pratius specifically on Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to other lands of the world. V'chein al-tzadikim, similar too, we know there's a special hashkacha b'pratius, v'ala oilim b'klolius, and every person, who's not, other people, not tzaddikim, is a b'klolius. V'tamin machmas ha'pratius ba'ashkacha el ha'klolius gamkin. Okay, so now says the Gaon like this. So what the Gaon has said is that everything in the world could be understood in and of itself as a dova prati, as a specific thing, to which is subjected what's called a specific providence, a particular providence, but could be understood as part of a klal. In which case, the hashkacha that it's subject to is called hashkacha klalos. Okay? I'm just reading and translating the Gaon. Later I will go on to explain what the Gaon appears to be saying here. Now, goes on the Gaon and says, and this is really here, a chiddush in the Gaon. V'tomid machmas ha'protis, v'hashkacha el ha'klalos gamkein. Says the Gaon, hashkacha goes from pratus to klolus. There's not two types of simultaneous hashgachos, two types of simultaneous providences, but rather the initial hashgacha is always in two stages. The first stage is hashgacha pratus. The second stage is hashgacha klalus. Why is the first stage hashgacha pratus and the second stage hashgacha klalus? Says the Gaon, ki ikar hu haprati. The ikar is, the main thing, is the prati. After that comes the klali. So first the Kodesh Baruch Hu is bashkiach on the prat, and after that is bashkiach on the klal. Says the Gaon, I'll give you an example. Kamo machmas ha'adam, nivu kol ha'bruim. For example, the ikar of creation is man. So man first gets his hashgacha, which hashgacha potis. For the second man, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the rest of the world. So therefore, the hashgacha potis of man leads to the hashgacha klalis on the rest of the creation. In other words, the hashgacha on the general world comes as a consequence of the hashgacha pratis of man. In addition, we get more prati. In other words, because of the tzaddik comes hashgacha on the rest of the world. Now, how does the Gaon know this? How does the Gaon know that hashgacha klalis follows hashgacha pratis? So says the Gaon in line 230, Vizel shamir akav ba ele yigulim. And this is the meaning of the fact that from the kav comes the yigulim, umispashet min akav el kol eagle the eagle, and that every eagle is bispashet from the kav. Okay, now let's explain what the Gaon is saying. The Gaon is saying is the yigulim represent hashkocha klolis, general providence. The kav, which I guess is the yosho, the kav, represents hashkocha plotis. Says the Gaon, hashkocha klolis always comes as a consequence or because of the hashkocha plotis. Says the Gaon, how do we know that the hashkocha klolis follows and comes as a consequence of the hashkocha plotis? That's because, first, the kav is mispashit. The kav emerges, comes out, and then it's misagel. And then it curves. It forms a concentric circle. So the Seder HaDvarim, the order of things in this geometrical symbol, is line, concentric circle. Another line, another concentric circle. Another line, another concentric circle. There's a clear order in which we first have a line and a concentric circle. In other words, this concentric circle is mispashet, grows out of the straight line. Says the Gaon, because we have this order of concentric circle growing out of straight line, we constantly have the rule that hashgacha klalis always comes as a consequence because of the hashgacha pratis. Now, having said that, I think it's important at this point to understand what is there in fact a machlokes between the Gaon and the Arizal. It seems to me that there is. Why is that true? For the following reason. It seems to me that my reading of the Arizal is that the little kavim, which are misagel, the small lines that become circles, that's not the ikka. Or Hayosha, the Ikka Yosha, that the Ari is speaking about, he speaks about Tzelem Elokim. It is the purpose of the Kavim, according to the Ari, was to make sure that the Gulim, the concentric circles, do not dissolve into each other, do not merge into each other. But what the Arizal calls the second Bechina of Yosha, which is Tzelem Elokim, which is the anthropomorphic structure of the spiritual light, is constituted of separate kavim, of separate lines, which have, of course, this three-way structure of right, left, and center. So the Gaon understands that the igulim and the yosher, in a certain sense, are not even really related. They're not related at all. In other words, every aspect of the bria has these two aspects to it, these two dimensions to it. But what we call Yosher is not something that is in any way becomes eagle, and then becomes Yosher, then becomes eagle. The guy, in a certain sense, is dismissing what the Arizal says on Daf Yud Beis of Aleph for the paragraph beginning V'yata Nevoya. In other words, there isn't a separate dimension of Yosher independent of Igula. But rather, Igulim and Yosher are very, very intimately connected, according to the guy. What constitutes Yosher? It's the small kavim which connect the different concentric circles. In addition, says the guy, there's an order here, which first we say Yosher, and then we say eagle. In other words, the Yosher becomes an eagle, line becomes concentric circle, that in turn becomes a line, then becomes a concentric circle. So in other words, what the Goyen is saying is that there's actually one system which flip-flops or consists of a process which takes an initial step of Yosher and then becomes eagle. Or let's put it this way, there's an initial Hashkacha Pratis. As a consequence of that, you have a Hashkacha Klolis. So the Goyen is in fact connecting very intimately Hashkacha klolos hashkacha pratis, which is in fact not so much mashma in the words of the Arizal. Now, the question is, what is the Goyen looking to understand differently from that of the Ari? So, for this, we have to back up, and what I want to do is I want to once again refer to perhaps the two shiurim that I've given previously and understand Perek Zayin in light of Perek Hei and Perek Vav. We remember that there was an entire shah in the Ariza, which we went into a lot of detail, which was called the Shah HaKudim. This we remember from last week. And the Shah HaKudim, we spoke that there were actually three types of lights. By the way, Derech Agav, these three types of life are for sure lights of Yosher. And this was basically the Or that's Mispashet, there was Or Choizet, there was the Rishimoy. And we spoke about at length last week that the two different types of lights of Rishimoy and Or Choizet, which represent Chesed and Din, represent a type of affirmation and a negativity, meaning what we call nature and logic. And this dialectical tension between being and non-being, between nature and logic, between the intellectualization of the particular, which dissolves the identity of the particular and makes it into a, and negates the particularness of the physical world, that in fact, this was responsible for the creation of the Kli, and the creation of the Kli represents the manner in which the nature and logic, or the Rishimoy, and the Or Chayzer are mediated in a synthesis where the Or enters into a Kli. And this was the conception of the universe before the world deconstructed itself, before the Shviras HaKelim. This represented the concept, the conception of creation in Atzilus before the Shvira, as described in the Arizal in the Shah HaKudim. That we remember from last week. And we remember too that the Goyen was rejected, this entire picture. For the Goyen, the purpose is never to have an exact fit of the Or to the Kli, but rather the Or, which represents the Or HaGonus, the original light to which man strives to connect, is something which never enters into the Kli in the first place, but rather it's Chayzer, it's Nignaz Bilamayla, and man, right, who lives in this physical world with this Kli and Or, this Or Panimi in the Kli, looks in a certain sense to transcend the Kli and to be Chayzer, to return to the Or HaGonos, which is transcendent. So therefore, we spoke about clearly that the Goyen wanted to eliminate the possibility of immanence, of light going to a Kli, and maintain the Hishit and Hashkafa, which he's expressed throughout the entire Klalim, that man achieves completion through transcendence. Because of this, the Ika Oya, the Ika Tachos of the world, is not to that the Or should fit into the Kli, that's immanence. In a certain sense, that's Christian. in the Hegelian sense. We spoke about that last week. But rather that the or, the ego or remains, gonus, hidden away, it's not in the kli. Man, through doing Torah and mitzvahs, looks to transcend the world and to reconnect with that which is transcendental, that which was eschatological. And that also fit into the Goyen's concept of neshama, which is outside of a person, as we've spoken about. This is also the sheet of the Nefesh HaChayim. The man's ik and neshama is not within him, but is outside of him. As man learns Torah, does mitzvahs, and delves into the world, man reconnects to that Or HaGodes, which is outside of him, which only, in a certain sense, illuminates him in not a strong manner, but in a very, very weak manner. As man learns Torah, he reconnects to that original light, which has been hidden away, and that's called Chazara B'tshuva, and that's called completion. That is what we saw in the Goyin, particularly in Klal Vav. However, the fact is that if, in fact, according to the Goyin, we do not have a stated purpose of the world, of which is imminent, meaning placing the infinite light within the limited kalim of the world, but rather the purpose of man is transcendence. So the question is that how do we account for the irreducibility of existence? Existence is irreducible. We see clearly that individuals, there's a concept of an individual, there's a concept of a tzaddik, there's a concept of El Yisrael versus the other countries, there's concepts of L'chor and Halacha, Tuma, Taira. In other words, we cannot understand that the purpose of logic is to erase and dissolve the differences between irreducible creations that we have around us, both physical and spiritual. How does the Goyin deal with the concept of irreducibility? Now, irreducibility for the Goyin is a very, very important thing. In fact, we saw previously in the Klolet that the Goyin speaks about a Kodesh Baruch Hu as having created the world b'chachma uvitvuna. And as you remember, the Goyin, in fact, actually defined the tivuna with which a Kodesh Baruch Hu creates the world as meaning, this was in Klal Gimel, that a Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world in such a way that only in this way could the world, with the world being created, could have been created only in this way, that the world will achieve its tachlis. In other words, the Goyin understands very clearly that there's an irreducibility to existence. The world cannot have been in any other way. So the fact is, if man transcends the world with his machshava, with his thought, and thought, of course, which looks to uncover the rational and scientific relationship between items in the world, which by definition erases the boundaries between objects in the world. So where is the irreducibility of the world expressed for the Goyin? How do we accept the fact that there are individuals, there are tzaddikim, there's El Yisrael, when in fact, by transcendence, we usually understand it as man's intellectual capacity to erase the differences between different items and emphasize that which they have in common, which is the fundamental, the fundamental units upon which existence is based, and to deny the clear irreducibility of the universe that surrounds us. That is, in fact, the problem which the Goyin has to face after he has, in fact, actually rejected the Ari's conception in Akudim of immanence. See, in immanence, when light enters into the physical world, we can say that the combination of Or and Kli in every individual item, in a certain sense, expresses an irreducibility, right? As we saw in the Hegelian system, right? The being onto itself mediates between nature and logic. But if for the Goyin, there's no being onto itself, there's this nature and logic. So in what sense, how does man intellectually approach the irreducibility of the world. Says the Goyim the following thing. First of all, says the Goyim, we have to understand that we don't look at things in terms necessarily that they created a priori with man's conception, but rather with God's conception. In other words, man operates backwards. God operates in the opposite direction, forwards, meaning as such. When God creates, he creates with a purpose. That purpose is always particular. God's creation is always with a purpose which is particular. In order for this particular thing which HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates to achieve its purpose, then it's created in the context which is more general, which gives expression to the particular status of this thing which God understands to be the purpose of creation. So therefore, for example, man is created, the world was created, right, for man. Kadosh Baruch Hu, therefore, after having conceived of man as the essence of creation, creates a world which accommodates the tachlis, the purpose, the raison d'etre of the creation of man. So in other words, for Kadosh Baruch Hu, creation is always teleological, has a specific purpose. Kadosh Baruch Hu first creates the purpose, conceives of the purpose. That's called Hashkacha Pratis. The world is created in order to accommodate this purpose. That's Hashkacha Klolis. Kadosh Baruch Hu creates Eretz Yisrael. That's Hashkacha Pratis. The rest of the world is created in order to accommodate and give expression to the Hashkacha of Eretz Yisrael. That's Hashkacha Klolis. In other words, Hashkacha Pratis, which precedes Hashkacha Klolis, is none other than saying that the world, there's a purpose in creation. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives a purpose in creation. Now, what's the purpose of man? L'chaira, the purpose of man is to work the opposite way. When man, in fact, does mitzvahs, then man, in fact, will be able to reconnect with the infinite life which is Godus, and by so doing, man is subject to a greater hashkacha. So, the way we understand the Goyim is in the following way. Creation has to be understood in two ways. For Kadosh Baruch Hu, there's a purpose in every creation. There's a tachlis, a specific purpose. The world, other than a tachlis, has to be created and developed and accommodated to that specific tachlis. Man has a tachlis, has a purpose. God creates the world to accommodate this tachlis. In other words, there's a purpose and expression of purpose. The purpose is called Hashkacha Pratis. The expression of that purpose is called Hashkacha Klolis. That's from the God side. From the man side, man, in a certain sense, looks at the world. There's a Rishima in the world, the Rishima of the Chachma of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Through the Rishima of the world, man is not negating the very, very irreducibility of the world. That's not the purpose of the Rishima for the Goyim, but rather, what's the Rishima for the Goyim? The Rishima for the Goyim represents that man, he looks at his creation, is able, through the Chokhmah of the world, to recover the tachlis, the purpose of creation. In other words, science is not just the expression of the erasure of the differences between objects, but science is what allows man to intellectually apprehend the purpose of creation, meaning through the individual elements of the universe, man is able to see how the creation, in fact, emanates from God in a teleological manner. That is the purpose of creation. Now, given that, the Goyin understands that by definition, when man looks at the world, there's going to be, of course, a dialectic between purpose and expression of purpose. In other words, everything which man sees in the world, man can undercover the chachma in that. And by undercovering the chachma in the back, man is able to better perceive the purpose of that creation. And that, in a sense, allows man to undercover a deeper chachma, which, of course, represents the expression, and then after the expression, we have, therefore, a particularization of that. In other words, the way man's mind works, the way man intellectually perceives the world, is as always prat and klal, prat and klal. Man perceives pratim, he perceives pratim, he perceives klalim. So in other words, like this, a man sees an object, understands the chokhmah, the deep wisdom of the object. That deep wisdom of the object creates, right, another prat, which in turn allows him much more clearly to see the purpose of creation. In other words, for the Goyin, man's intellectual thought is not a negation of the particularness of objects, but rather is the uncovering of the purpose of particular objects through man's understanding of the very, very details. Man is not erasing the differences between objects in the world, but what man is doing is he's seeing how the individual objects, that which things have in common, come together in different combinations, and by seeing how we go from the prat, from the different combinations, which are the part of the klal, to the prat, we better understand the tachlis of creation. Let me give you an example. When we look at a person, we can take the person and we can uncover the different biological functions in a person. As we understand this deeply, we uncover the cells and then the protoplasm and then all of the amino acids and the basic building blocks from which a person is constructed. The purpose of understanding the amino acids is not to say that basically all people are the same. And there's no such thing as a person, but just amino acids. The purpose of uncovering the basic building blocks of biology is to see that how, in fact, these amino acids come together in unique individuals. So we see here that the tachlis of the amino acids is to produce something called an individual. So from the prat, which means from the individual things, from the individual things which represent the klal, we come to an expression of the prat. So Kadosh Baruch Hu expresses what it is to be a man by uncovering, letting us to discover the amino acids which come together in very, very unique ways through proteins, through RNA, to DNA, to the very uniqueness of the person. This helps us understand that the creation is teleological, that the creation has purpose, and that everything has a purpose. So in other words, the Goyin is taking the opposite end from what we interpreted the Ariza from last week. From last week, we understand that the purpose of thought is negation of the particular. And therefore, this dialectic between particular, between the thing, the nature, and logic, which negates the particulars, this can only be mediated by an immanence of the spiritual within the physical. The Goyin rejects this. The Goyin says, what we have is tachlis, is purpose in creation, God's will. By uncovering the fundamental units of the creation, we can better understand how these fundamental units are forged into unique objects, unique individuals, and that gives us a perspective, in understanding the purpose, the tachlis, the theological nature, the uniqueness with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. And that is the shita of the Gaon. The purpose of science is not to erase the boundaries of between objects, but is to get to express the specific hashkacha that there are in fact irreducible objects which are not the same as other objects. This is the purpose of Klal Zayin. The purpose of Klal Zayin is to present to us an alternative picture by which we can understand this antinomy, this dialectic between the particular, the general, between nature and between logic. This is the shita which the Gaon has taken the Shah, Igulim V'Yosher of the Elizal, and in fact used it, created from it, a very, very powerful tool by which through discovery and through science and through intellectually pondering the world, through the structure of the physical world, we're able to determine purpose. We're able to determine the Ratzon Hashem. We're able to determine how unique the creation, as it appears to us, really is, despite what one would think would be its myriad possibilities. Now, the purpose of Hashgacha, Hashgacha Prot, Hashgacha Klolos, is important for another reason too. And this is going to figure in into the next part of the Gaon. I want to give an introduction to this. I said before, 2 weeks ago, is that the Gaon is taking a turn. We're taking a turn from ontology to ethics. We're taking a turn from understanding nature objectively to understanding nature is expressing the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're taking a turn from God as a creator to God as a personal God. In other words, we're making a divide. The spheres, which express the metaphysical structure of the world, to the paltzufim, which emphasize the personal aspect of the metaphysical part of the world. We're going from Chochma Bina Vadas, which is reflection, which is plan, to the lowest viewers, which are hashkacha, which are providence. The question is that how are we to understand the way in which the world expresses this personal aspect, the deus persona, the personal God? Where do we go and see in the world tachlis and purpose? Says the Gaon, the way we understand this is through this dialectic between Hashkacha Protes, Hashkacha Klolos, Igulim and Yosher. The fact that there can be, on one hand, a general picture which illuminates the generalness, the generality of things, and the underlying fundamental structure of things have in common, in contrast to the particularness of the creation, that from myriad possibilities, there's a unique structure in the world. This irreducibility that comes from a potential of reducibility, this expresses a will, a teleology, a tachlis in creation, which in a certain sense is the physical and ontological basis for will and for ethics. In other words, the directedness of creation is an expression that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with a ratzon, that there's a hashkacha, and as a result of that, we can relate to the creation not only as a scientific object, but as in a personal ethical manner. This is in fact fundamental in the passage that we're making between the first five prokim, the Gaon, which focused upon man's objective understanding of the physical world and of the Torah, to the ethical aspects of the world, which is expressed through man's apperception of irreducibility and of the Ratzon and Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in other words, in Klal Zayin, what the Gaon says is that the true way of looking at the world is not where man's scientific pursuit negates the irreducibility of the world, but on the contrary, man's scientific pursuit allows man to greatly appreciate, to further appreciate the Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that through the myriad possibilities, very unique creation emerges and presents itself to the human being. And this is, in fact, actually the purpose of Klal Zayin. Now, we're coming up to actually Klal Ches, which in a certain sense is going to, in fact, deepen this very, very idea. And what I want to do is I want to just start reading Klal Ches. It begins on line 233. Hasilik v'ashvira hi b'mchinas nikudim. Hasilik shvira b'mchinas nikudim. Now, what is the Gaon referring to? What are nikudim? So, in fact, actually, we spoke about in the previous shiurim that Yankov Avinu has a dream. The sheep are coming out of the river, akudim, nikudim, uvrudim. Akudim, as we've seen in the Arizal, represents the initial conception of Atzilus, where the oar fits directly into the kli, the creation of kelim. Akudim comes from the word nekar, a kli. After that comes nekudim. In the Arizal, this is what's called the drush of nekudim, and the drush of nekudim is the world of the shvira, of the breakage of the vessels. This is a very, very important central concept of the Kabbalah, which we've spoken about a little bit before. We've noticed the contrast between the Gaon and the Arizal. We're going to deepen this machloekes, this divide between the Gaon and the Arizal, Mitzvah, when we speak about Nekudim. So in other words, the Gaon now is going to go back to the notion of Nekudim. After the Gaon has redefined, what is Akudim? What is the purpose of Kalim? The purpose of Kalim is not to contain the divine light, but rather to establish the methodology by which man apprehends the teleological hashkach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. So what is the Nekudim? What is this point of the Nekudim, which is actually going to represent the Shvira for the Gaon? Once again, the Yesod, the source of the Nekudim, is the Zoya. And Mir Tashem, next week, we're going to go very deeply into the words of the Gaon in Klal Ches to understand the concept of Shvira and understand the concept of the Kudim. And because of that, we're going to understand on a very deeper level the Or HaGonos, the illumination of the world, the way man intellectually perceives God's Hashkach in the world. And by so doing, we'll be able to come to the final theory, the final Kabbalah of the Gaon, which is going to construct the entire Ilan HaKadosh of Patsufim, Atik, Arich, Zer Anpin, Abba Ve'ima, and reconstruct in perhaps a different light the entire Kabbalah of the Arizal. This is Mir Tashem. We will begin next week. Until then, I wish everybody should have a good tavach, a good week, and we will continue Mir Tashem with the Asara Klalim of the Gaon, Sechusa Yogan Aleinu, Amen.